cinephiles, audiophiles, ladies and germs, welcome to the Film Cult Podcast. Tonight, he's from Splooey Luma, Exes with Benefits, The Deception, but you're all going to know him a little bit better as Alex Vincent. It's actually Alex Shumway, but it's from Green River. Alex, how are things?
It's 10 in the morning. I don't do 10 in the morning. Musicians never do 10 in the morning.
I was going to say, when was the last time that you did a 10 a.m. like interview like this?
I did do one not too long ago. I don't remember who it was with, though. I just remember it was somebody saying, "Can I do an interview with you?" "Yeah, sure." 10 in the morning? Oh, shit. Okay. You say so.
Okay. Speaking of time, what was like the peak hour for you when you're writing music? And honestly, has it changed now as opposed to what it was back in the day?
I never wrote music back in the day. They never let me write music back in the day.
You weren't even writing stuff on the side, though?
Not during Green River. X's with Benefits, I take that back. X's with Benefits, I wrote almost all the music. The Deception, I write a good portion of the music. But Splooey Numa, of course not Splooey Numa, but Green River, no, I think I wrote like two songs, and you know, I wasn't a guitar player. So, you know, I'm a drummer. Shut up. Count to four.
You're the fucking backbone of the band. Come on now.
No. I'm the. It's like they always say. Yeah, but you know, do you want to meet everybody in the band? Here, meet this guy. What do you play? I'm the drummer. Oh, okay. Where's the guitar player? Where's the singer?
Well, I want to take you way back because I want to like kind of, I want you to start thinking a little bit about your influences, because grunge has become this whatever word at this point.
Yeah.
I'm curious if you actually like that word more now than you did back then. And if you do still really consider Green River to maybe be the first grunge band, or if you think that it's somebody like the Wipers and what Greg was doing back then, even before that.
Yeah. I don't, the word grunge used to stick with me a little bit more, and it didn't bug me. It doesn't really bug me now. It's just sort of, it's such a catch-all phrase that people who are grunge, supposedly, you know, boy, I am just very articulate right now. fuck. It's just such a catch-all phrase that people who are like, you could go from the Melvins to Alice in Chains, and there's like absolutely nothing in common with them, but for some reason they would call Alice in Chains grunge. And they wouldn't call the Melvins grunge, though I would throw them in under that if you were doing a giant blanket cover for all of it. But I don't really think about it that much anymore. Thank God.
Well, when was it that you like picked up your first punk record? Because was that,
oh shit,
like was that shit happening at Northwest boarding school, or like,
oh no, it wasn't a boarding school. Northwest wasn't a boarding school. It was an artsy fartsy, you know, semi-socialist, kind of hippie dippy school back when I went there. So it wasn't a boarding school. Thank God that wasn't a boarding school. And mind you, when I say there was like sort of socialist hippieist, I don't mind socialists. Hippies drive me nuts. I don't mind socialists so much. Anyways, what was the question?
Well, hold on.
Oh, no. Okay, go ahead.
Because I actually want to hit on that a little bit, because I know somebody that also went to Northwest, and they more considered it a boarding school as opposed to an art school. So that's kind of why I had that conception about it.
Yeah, no, it was the full name is Northwest School of the Arts, Humanities, and Sciences. And the reason why it's a boarding school, it wasn't a boarding school when I went there.
Okay, okay.
But I guess they've got dorms and international students, and it costs more than your, you know, university. So, you know, that it wasn't really much of a boarding. It wasn't a boarding school at all when I went there. But now I guess you could say it is, because they do have dorms and international students and all that fun and dandy stuff. So, but anyways, I'm going to go back to the my first punk rock record.
Yes.
Yes. I could tell you the exact day it happened. Was, I can't remember the exact date, but it was the summer of 81, I believe. And I went to a party with my sister, and some guys took over the turntable, and they played Dead Kennedys, Fresh Fruit for Wadding Vegetables, Sex Pistols, Never Mind the Bollocks, and the Ramones, Alive. And it was those three records that night that made me just go like, okay, you know, that's this is it. This is what I've been looking for all my life. And it was from that point on, I was stuck. I mean, there were times when I would see things like, I remember the Devo being on Saturday Night Live, and I became punk curious.
Hold on. Did you watch that Legendary Fear performance on SNL as well?
I did. I think that was on Fridays. I think that's when the TV show Fridays was going, and I think it was on that. Or was it?
No, it was on SNL. Yeah.
No, you're right, because John Belushi brought him in for the show. Yeah. It blew my mind. But by that time, I was already heavy into punk rock. You know, I already knew. I knew that Fear was going to be on, so it was like, I'm watching this. And it was wonderful, because they absolutely just killed the place.
Well, I want to take you to what you just said in the Dead mm-hmm. Kennedys, because mm-hmm. you became incredibly political later in your life. I want mm-hmm. to know, do you think that maybe that moment right there is what sparked everything, is hearing Jello?
My family is pretty not, we weren't political, but we were, political adjacent. You know, we were there, and we would keep our eye on the news and things like that, but it wasn't really political at all. I was sort of political when I ran into the Dead Kennedys and things like that, but it was like all that music basically kind of opened my head up to that, you know, oh my God, there's injustice. Though I kind of knew there was anyways, there was like, oh, there's injustice out there, and some people are being screwed. And then also on the other side, that there's like emotional angst that hasn't really hit me at that time. But then again, the emotional angst was going to hit really soon, because the hormones were popping. And it was from that point that punk rock basically grabbed me and said, okay, this is something more than just, you know, love songs and I'm going to lay this girl and stuff like that. That, you know, ugh.
So,
you know,
how
Hotel California. Yay.
Well, how quick in the Northwest were you like coming up with the idea for Splooey Numa then?
Oh, I was sort of trying to find a band, I guess, and I don't think anybody really, not too many people knew that I played drums, Not only that, I had just moved up from California, so I didn't really have a drum set or anything. I had no place to put one. One day, as I was walking around, me and Steve Turner were thinking about making a band, and we came up. I think we came up with the name before we even came up with the band itself. Splunuma, somebody had written on the wall, John Lennon Lives, and some genius, literally a genius, wiped out the word lives and wrote Wint Spluinuma, because he was shot, so he
Yeah.
went Spluinuma. So that's where we got that from. And I think the name might have come before the actual music itself, which is usually what happens with a teenage band. I got a great name for a band. What is it? Oh, I can't say.
Well, okay, so did you start off behind the kit like when you were really young, or did you like start learning piano or another instrument even before that?
Oh no, I was a drummer. Since I started taking lessons, I think when I was about 7 or 8, maybe. And it was, I guess my choices were piano or drums. My father was a jazz pianist, so I kind of got my musical chops from him. I mean, the DNA kind of splashed into me, and so I started to get it. I was the one into music. The rest of the family was into they're all medical people. My sister's a PA, my mother was a nurse. The whole family was just basically jazz people and medical people. It was basically from my dad that I was doing music, and I thought, well, I want to make noise. I'm a 7 years old. 7 year olds love to beat the shit out of stuff. So I was given, here's some drumsticks, and we'll have you take drum lessons. And that lasted about a couple months. That was a waste of the parents' money. But it was since then I had taught myself basically how to play drums. I just had some very rudimentary stuff hanging out. But yeah.
Well, what kind of records was your dad playing around the house? And like if he was a jazz guy, was he playing stuff like Buddy Rich, and like were you being influenced by things like that, or not even?
No, not at all. I mean, basically, we listened to Dave Brubeck was one that I don't remember exactly from him. I just remember what records were left over. And it was Dave Brubeck. Oh, shit, come on, Alex. They're all just sitting around the house. Fuck. Errol Garner, Oscar Peterson. I don't know. Then there was stuff like Stan Getz. Things like that kind of stuff was lying around the house, and that's the stuff that he would play. I don't really remember him playing those exact things. All I know is that I had a bunch of records after my mom and dad got divorced. My father moved away, but he left some records around, and those were the records that he left, were those. And I knew that there was music going on in the house, and there were musicians that would come by every once in a while. And so, yeah.
Well, I'm curious what sparked the move up to Seattle then from the early days in California.
That's something I won't go
Okay.
into. We'll just say that I moved up from California, which is bad enough in and of itself.
Are you happy that that's where you ended up?
Oh, absolutely.
To become a Seattleite, because would you say that that city, that culture, that state really shaped who you would become?
In the long run, yes. In the short run, I cut my punk rock teeth on down in California. That's where it was my freshman, sophomore year of high school when I started to actually get into punk rock. And I was going to school with some people who had bands. One band was called the Square Cools. Another band was called Mod Philo, which is the worst name for a band I've ever heard, which stands for Modern Philosophy, which is just, if anybody from Mod Philo listens to this, I apologize, but you guys have the worst fucking name for a band. And I don't know if you know Tales of Terror. I went with to the school with the bass player for Tales of Terror, and he didn't like me too much. He thought I was a giant poser. Well, I guess I was one, but you do what you got to do. You got to cut your teeth somehow.
Well, I want to get a little bit into Green River because
Okay.
what was your favorite venue to play at? Like, just try to take yourself back to those early days, because and it's really sad, and we can even cut this a little bit into modern times, because a lot of venues, especially in Seattle, did close down over the pandemic.
Yeah.
And so are you a little bit, I guess, nostalgic for the old days of what the scene used to be in Seattle as well?
No. There, how's that? No, nostalgic for it. No, there was a time at the height of Green River. It was like my ego. I had a huge ego going on at that time, because I was in the hottest band in town. I was one hot motherfucker. And so I had this ego going, and there was a scene going on at that time, and it was really cool. But I think it was really cool because I was just, hot shit. Then the band broke up, and I noticed that the scene was really fluid, that it would go from, Green River died. Okay, well, Green River people are becoming Mother Love Bone. Mother Love Bone came first, before Mudhoney, I believe. No, I take that back. They both started at the same time, but Mother Love Bone was more of the people that I used to hang around with, and I became not persona non grata, but I wasn't the hot shit anymore. So, that was a big blow to my ego. So yeah, that point, that's when I basically knew that, there was no. It was the scene was very fluid. There was no, when Mudhoney came about, I was like, this is fantastic. Mother Love Bone, I fucking hated. But yeah, I mean, there was no, I never really think about the thought about the scene. For a while I did. I was, but I was hurt. Because I wasn't in it, I wasn't, I wasn't part of the scene anymore. So, yeah. I mean, I can tell you how much I didn't like Mother Love Bone if you want me to go into
I kind of want to touch on Mother Love Bone a little bit, because from my understanding, it really seems like what Chris was doing with Soundgarden was really impacting what was happening with the breakup of Green River to begin with. And from my understanding, this had a lot to do with the vocals. So did you find it interesting that some guys went over and really focused on Andrew, essentially being a very vocal guy, and Mark went and did his own thing and really just said fuck you to everybody and continued doing what he was doing. Do you think maybe that's why you even had a little bit more respect for what Mark went and did do?
No. there's your another one of your short answers for
I love it.
Next question. I liked Mudhoney better than Mother Love Bone, because they were actually more up my alley at that point.
Well, they were more punk.
Though, yeah, exactly. I mean, they were at that point, I guess you could say that I was a whore. If either one of those bands would have asked me to play with them, I would have done it in a second, you know, even though the music from Mother Love Bone just made me ill. But I was, like I said, I was a whore. I would have done it. I would have done it. I'd have sold my soul. What the hell?
Well, I'm curious. Did anybody come to you after the breakup of Green River?
No. There were other drummers out there that were technically better than I was. Better than I am. So they went to other people that were more geared towards what they were going to do. Though, yeah, I was going to say, there was no way I could have been a drummer for Mother Love Bone, because the drummer that they got was amazing. And with Mudhoney, you know, they got Dan, and Dan was the perfect fit for them. But no, neither one of them asked me to do anything, assholes.
Do you maybe find that was just an easier way for you to transition into Tokyo at that point then, and just kind of leave?
At that point, well, that came about from, I used to work at a clothing/shoe store, and there were these Japanese girls that taught, they were learning something. They went to the local community college, and they used to come in all the time because we were the cool store. And they would sit there and they would talk with each other, and they would let you know that they were talking about you by, in the middle of speaking Japanese, they would drop your name. And they would look out of the corner of their eye and go like, yeah, he knows we're talking about him. Let's talk about him some more. So it was at that point I was like, oh God, you know, this is driving me nuts. I'm going to take Japanese and find out what the hell they're saying. So I took Japanese, and I found out later on that they were wondering, you know, they were saying to themselves, I wonder, is Alex gay? Can't tell if he's gay. Like, well, I just have long hair, but, you know, no, not gay. But it's okay if you are. You know, but no, I wasn't, you know, so they, at that point, it was like going, okay, I'm going to find out Japanese and all this other stuff. And then I found out that I could, at my university, I could do a student exchange overseas, that I actually started getting more into what Japan was like. And then I came back and I was like, okay, I'm going to finish school. I'm getting out of here. I'm going to go live in Tokyo. So that's what I did. I switched universities, went directly into a study abroad, studied in Japan for a year, came home, finished up school, went right back over. Isn't that an exciting synopsis of my life at that point? Jesus.
Did you keep up with what was happening in not even just Seattle and not the grunge scene, but just the American music scene in general when you were over in Tokyo? Or were you finding a lot of local bands over there, or did you kind of just let music sit by the wayside at that point in time?
Oh, you couldn't get away from it. I mean, in Japan sucks up so much outside culture musically that there was no way I could get around, who was at, what bands were out there, especially what bands were in Seattle or Seattle adjacent. One band that I remember in particular that used to catch me was from, Sub Pop, CZ record. I can't remember which one they were. I think they were on Sub Pop. Was Pond, and they used to play Pond, and I fell in love with them. I thought they were great. But there was always something out there. Somebody would always shove something at me and go, hey, "Listen to this, here's Teenage Fan Club." And I hadn't heard Teenage Fan Club. But, oh, that's great. Oh, here's fuck if I know. There's so many bands I can't remember anymore. Fuck. All those drugs and alcohol just burned my brain cells out.
Well,
No kids, no kids. I did not do drugs and alcohol. But it's okay if you do, I guess.
since we're on the topic of Japan, though, how and when were you approached by John to being big in Japan? Because, and also,
Oh.
I fucking loved your performance in it. You made the entire movie.
Yeah,
you were so fun. Come on.
bullshit.
Don't even
The
start
best,
this.
the best character, the best character in the whole thing is Mons, the German guy from New Jersey. That's the best character in the whole film. No offense to anybody else who's in the film, but he was fucking hilarious. So no, I wouldn't pat myself on the back one for that one. I'm not going to be seeing any Academy Awards coming my way for that. But how did I meet John? I was in a band called at one point I was in a band called The Repeat Offenders, and the bass player was married to this woman who was a producer, and she knew another producer who was working on a film about a guy. She knew. Fuck, how do I explain this? Boy, you're going to be doing a lot of editing on this one.
Pure raw, come on now.
Yeah. Shit. His wife was a producer, new producer who was working on a film with this guy that had to do with a band going over to Japan. My friend's wife knew that I used to live in Japan, and that was my big thing. And she talked to the other producer, I guess, and the producer then talked to John, and John said, "Oh yeah, let's get this guy. He probably knows some stuff about Japan. Where would be a neat place to go to shoot stuff? What areas?" So I went, and I basically just met with him, and he was asking me, questions about, "Oh, where would be cool with, should we shoot in Yoyogi or should we shoot in Shinjuku? Should we shoot in Shibuya, or are there any places in Shibuya that we should shoot, that would be a good place?" So he was ba it started off with him just asking me where would be a good place to go to make the film, where would, and just general questions like that. And one day that they were like, "Well, okay, Alex speaks Japanese. Alex lived over there. It would probably be easier if we just took Alex over there and, possibly pointing some stuff out." And so that's how I got sucked into the film, which was great because I got two free trips to Japan out of it. But yeah, I mean, that's basically, they brought me on sort of to be a guide of some sort, I guess. But they found another person who was much better at it than I was. But I was kind of their the band's road manager of sorts. So I helped them set up all the shows, and I was like working as a translator between whoever was working at the club and the guys in the band. And so I basically went from being a question board to being, you know, an actual sort of road manager of sorts. So that's that.
Are you interested in doing any more film work?
No. actually, I take that back. I wouldn't mind it, but if anybody sees that sees the film, sees my acting, they know better. They know better to stay away.
Come on, it's a ton of fun. If anybody hasn't
it
seen
it, it was great fun. It was a blast. But my acting stinks, which is. I'm not trying to say that to make myself sound like poor, pitiful me. It's just like, no, man, my acting sucks. You know, what the hell?
Well,
but yeah, and if people can find it if they want, I mean, it's playing on YouTube for free, and it's playing on Tubi if you want to watch it with commercials, so they can see the film. And they can decide for themselves whether I deserve an award.
Well, the first time that you came back from Japan, back into America, you were doing a little bit more politically.
Mm-hmm.
Take me through that a little bit, because is that something that you kind of envisioned yourself doing when you got back?
Well, I was always, you know, like I said, I was always into politics, especially after punk rock started up, you know, in my life. You know, I was more and more aware of politics. But when I got back, how did this happen? I got back and, oh, fuck, how did I run into this? There was... oh man, who did I know? Somebody introduced me, was saying, oh, there's this woman who needs a campaign manager. She's running for the state house. And her name's Patty Butler. I thought, okay, you know, let me check her out. I'll see, you know, make sure that she's not a total right-wing nutbag. And she wasn't. She's a good liberal. That is, if you're into liberals, I am.
I'm just gonna point out right now, I'm pretty sure anybody that listens to this is very left leaning. So
that's fine. Thank God. You know, I hope there are no maggots out there listening to this. Or if they are, I hope they get it. I hope they're.
With the amount of people that I've had on this show, I'm just gonna assume that anybody MAGA isn't fucking anywhere near this show. the amount that we bash the tangerine fascist is never ending on here. So,
oh, thank God. No. Okay, then I don't have to worry about that then. No, Patty was a good liberal. Fuck you. So I ran her campaign, and she was supposed to pay me, but she never paid me because we didn't have that much money. The campaign was on such a shoestring budget. Anyways, she won thanks to me. That's not true. But she won, and the way that she paid me back was saying, hey, you can be my legislative assistant. You can come down to Olympia with me and work for me. So that's what I did. And that was the best job ever. I loved that job. Unfortunately, the second time she ran for office, she blew it, and she lost by like 14 votes. And I was out of a job. So But if I could have been, if I could have carried politics in somewhat further, I would have. I would have run for office. I wanted to sort of run for office, but you know,
It's
too many
not,
skeletons,
it's
too much
no.
money, too much money, too many skeletons in my closet.
No,
You know, it would have come out,
we
it would
need
have come
people
out
like
the,
you.
yeah, right. Yeah, you need a person who once played naked in front of a few hundred people.
That's fine.
You know, but you know, because people would come out, he played naked. He was not wearing any clothes. It's like, yeah, you're right. I wasn't. And I was 40 pounds lighter. I looked much better back then. I'd do it again. Sure.
But that all comes down to, I also think that we just live in a different world now, and everything is 14 seconds of news and it's gone into the ether. I think all of that would be swept under the rug very quickly. So I do think that you should run. And would you are still young. Would you ever consider doing
No.
it? Okay. Well,
I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't want to run for office. I wouldn't want to run for office, but I wouldn't mind working, doing what I wouldn't mind being a legislative assistant like I was, especially because my boss was really cool. She was, I wasn't your, there are two different kind, oh, fuck, I'm not going to go, oh, screw it, I'm not going to go into that. Nobody wants to know about
do
that.
it. Please do it. Everybody loves the nitty-gritty on here. Please.
Oh, shit. Okay, there are two kinds of legislative assistants, usually. One is a kind of a secretary, who are, they're probably the best secretaries in the world because they do the other side of the job, which is all, but only less so, which was what my thing was. I was sort of like a gatekeeper of sorts. It's like I kind of knew who Patty would talk to. She would, you know, she would have a sit down with the people in the unions. And she would have sit downs with, you know, if there were human rights people or something coming into Washington State, or, you know, she would talk to people like that. She would have an actual sit down. And then there were people that she would talk to, which were called a walk and talk, where she would walk out of the office and she was on her way to the House floor. The person could talk to her as she was walking there. So I kind of would, they would come in and I would say, I would ask Patty, do you want me to schedule them in to have you come in? Or do you want to do a walk and talk with these people? Because I know, and then there were people like the NRA and she wouldn't talk to them. So fuck that. You know, and that's basically what I, you know, and I would sit down and she would like ask me some things. She wouldn't, I wouldn't say she took my, I would ask advice, but she would throw stuff out there and I'd go like, ooh, ah, you know, because I'm not allowed to speak politics with her, but I can, ooh, that sounds good. That's kind of neat. I think I need to go type something up. I'm not allowed to discuss this with you because that wasn't, that's a political job and my job wasn't supposed to be political. But yeah, there are two different kinds of legislative assistants, and I was not the secretary. I was not the one who could type 40 words a minute, you know, maybe 25. But you know, there, yeah, I mean that's what it came down to. And then she lost, and I actually worked for one more session for another guy whose last name was Rockefeller. And yes, he did was related to the Rockefellers in some distant manner, but he was looking for somebody that was more like a secretary. You know, he would, if somebody wrote in, he would want me to write him a whole letter about, you know, whatever topic they had written in on. And so I would write a letter, and he would take it, and he would mark it up, and say, "Here, try it again, and here, do it again, and again." And you've got letters coming in constantly or messages coming in, and you couldn't write a letter specifically for each person, every time something came in, you would sort of let people know that you got the information. Thank you very much. You know, I'm going to keep this in mind. I'll keep this in mind. I'll put this over here just in case this vote ever comes to either my committee or if it comes to the floor, I'll take, you know, I'll remember that you said this. We'll keep it. So, you know, working for the other guy, it was virtually impossible for me because I was, you know, I was not, I just wasn't a secretary. I haven't done those kinds of things. Secretaries are much smarter than I am when it comes to certain aspects of what the fuck I should be doing. You know, every once in a while you get this look of what the fuck are you doing? Like, I don't know. Am I doing this right? No, you are not doing that right. Okay. What should I be doing? Anything, but not that. You know.
The clock is now turned. The calendar is also turned. We are in 2024 in an election year in the States. Mm-hmm. Are you terrified?
Very. There are times when I think there's no fucking way in hell that Trump could win. You know, people are smarter than that. And then there are times when I go like, fuck, no, he can take this. And he's going to ruin the country. But, I mean, he can take it. I mean, there are things like – I was reading that black people are beginning to turn away from Biden. They're not turning towards Trump. They're just going to tune out and not vote because there are certain things that Biden hasn't done. And I kind of go like, well – he's only one person. He can't switch everything over and like that. You know, he has to go through Congress and he has, you know, and he has to work out things, even if it was just with the Democrats. He would have to work with people like Joe Manchin and water shit down. You know, he tried to get police reform through, but he couldn't get police reform through because the Senate would block it, they would filibuster it, and there was no way that it was going to go through. And so some people in certain groups are saying like, well, he's not doing enough. And it's like, well, he can only do so much. But if you look at it this way, he might not be able to do everything you want, but compare it to the other guy. The other guy's going to come in and he's going to ruin this country. And I mean, you used to hear that all the time. Every time an election would come around, oh, this is the most important election of your lifetime. George W. Bush is going to kill us all. You know, and I kind of go like, well, I wouldn't mind having a George W. Bush right now. Running, I wouldn't want him in office. But, you know, it's like he would be somebody that if he ran, I wouldn't be afraid that the country was going to become non-existent.
You can at least, you can at least have a discussion with W.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's no fear of this being, you know, being such an existential crisis that it is now. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, people are upset and I can understand why they're frustrated, but the president isn't a dictator, you know, so he can't wave his hand and say, this is what's going to happen. Ha ha ha. I don't care what the Congress has to say, you know, so he's working on what he can do under the situation that he has.
And if you want to keep it not being a dictator, please consider voting.
So, yes, vote and don't vote for the orange guy. As a matter of fact, I was going to say vote for anybody else, but don't vote for anybody else because of third party vote. No offense to people who are into third parties. I voted for Ralph Nader when he ran the first time, which looking back on it was a big mistake.
It can work up here in Canada. It does not work in the States.
Exactly. Not at all. You guys have a parliamentary system and Oh fuck, what's it called? Proportional representation, which we don't have, which we should have, but we don't have. So the best thing you could say with how it's proportional representation, well, no, it's not proportional representation within the Democratic Party. There's like about three or four different parties under the umbrella of a Democratic Party. Because you've got everything from AOC to Joe Manchin, and they call them, they all call themselves Democrats. And it's difficult to, it's like grunge. You call it grunge, but it's such a huge umbrella.
I love it. I love that we went full circle there. Well, I'm now curious, are you hopeful for the future? Do you have any faith within the young people of today?
Yes. There. Especially because my speaking to like my kids, they're my kids, their generation is a lot more open to things that are out there. I remember growing up, and I was in a generation where things were beginning to switch over to where when you were young, people used to think, they would make fun of gay people. They would, run around and call the, okay, people are going to be sort of might be sort of offended by this, but it's the only way I can put it. People used to run around and, they would call you faggot to sort of put you down. And then it came, we came from the generation as we got older, it's like, hey, wait a minute, this is bullshit. I mean, people are just trying to live lives the way that they live their lives. So, what should I give a shit if somebody's gay or not? They're not doing anything to me. So, and I thought that, wow, we're sort of enlightened. We are now, opening up towards things like that. And then my kids come along, and they're open to, I mean, LGBTQ, LGBTQ plus, LGBTQIA, LGBTQIA plus. They're more accepting and more open to other people's lives. They aren't into putting people down. I mean, the whole thing with personal pronouns, I think is I'm older, so I don't get it in some forms, because I am my parents. My parents didn't understand everything punk rock. They sort of understood what I was into. They could understand it. They could see it. They knew it wasn't anything that was harmful, so they, would just let it go. But they were happy that I was more open towards things. And now I go along, and I am my parents. I don't understand it, but I see what they're doing. It's not harmful. It's open towards it's open-mindedness, and the kids these days are just brilliant when it comes to things like that. And I am still my kids are teaching me. I think I've gone as far as I could in teaching my kids on things that are openness. Yeah. So I think that my kids have done much better than I have, and they've been teaching me actually more than I could even hope.
Well, speaking of your kids teaching you, do they ever show you new music, and are you finding new things that way?
Yes, my kids are, oh my God. Girl in Red, There is a
fantastic,
do you know Girl in Red?
Fantastic.
Love Girl in Red. And my kids, one day we were driving around and they said, oh, can I play something on Pandora? I said, yeah, sure. And they put this thing on and it was Girl in, a station called Girl in Red Radio. And it started playing, you know, a bunch of Girl in Red. And I'm like, going, oh my God, who is this? This is great. It reminds me of Joy Division in that it's angsty and she doesn't have that great voice. She doesn't have any vibrato in her voice when she sings. It's just clean and flat, and the lyrics are great because they're a lot more personal and they're really angsty. You know, there are times when I can't tell in feeling, I can't tell the difference between what something the Girl in Red sings and Love Will Tear Us Apart. You know, the feeling of those two are, I think, are on the same plane. And yeah, it's amazing. And I asked my kids, you know, what is this? And they said, oh, it's Girl in Red. And I said, what station? Girl in Red Radio. They go, well, we don't call it Girl in Red Radio. We call it the lesbian station. Well, okay, then I'm going to start listening to the lesbian station. It was, you know, by the way, my daughter, she's bi, so, you know, she can call it the lesbian station all she wants.
Well, are you yourself making new music going forward?
Am I making new music? You mean like, am I trying to get out of a genre?
Well,
Or
no,
am
just
I?
are you writing? Can we expect any new music coming up from
Oh,
you?
yeah. Well, from The Deception, we have just finished. We finished recording. I think we finished recording, finished mixing. I think it needs to be mastered, for an album that's going to come out. Excuse me, on Lufu. I'm going to burp. And I'm sure oh, like I said, you're going to have a lot of editing to do on this thing. So I'm sure that people love to hear their guests burp on air. But anyways, it's coming out on the label called Loose Groove. Loose Groove is Stone Gossard's label. So yeah, Stone is picking us up to put out this record that we did. So yes, there is stuff that's coming out. I can't tell you the exact date because I'm not really sure, you know. Yeah, but yes, there is new stuff that will be coming out. I write stuff. I've got a whole back catalog of stuff that I've written. You know, stuff that I'd written for Exes with Benefits that I still have sitting around. That's kind of poppy, and then I've got more punk rock stuff that I wrote for The Deception. You know. Yeah.
Well, perfect. Alex, I want to thank you so
Yes.
much for coming on here. You're always welcome. You are a friend of the show. You ever want to just fucking come in
Oh,
here and just bitch about politics? Let's go.
don't
Anytime.
say that. Don't say that. You'll be getting a phone call from me whenever things get uptight down here. You gotta
That's
have me back
fine.
on the show.
That's
You gotta
fine.
have me back on the show. I gotta bitch and moan about this shit.
I would love that. But Alex, truly thank you. It really means a lot that you came on here.
Oh,
I
thank
know
you.
my listeners are big fans. I'm a massive fan of everything that you've ever done, so it really does mean a lot.
Okay, if you say so, sure.
Listen, I'm a fucking Seattle whore. Like, look at this shit.
Yeah, I know. You got the crack in the
I am the
hat.
biggest Seattle whore there is. Everything about that city, and I'm not even from there. It's to me, it's the greatest city in the world. And so
Seattle's only one of two places that I would want to live. Here in Tokyo are the only two places I would ever want
you though are so underrated within the
to
community. It's not even fucking funny.
Okay.
God damn it! You were in the Deep Six compilation. Come on.
I'm not fishing for compliments, but thank you very much.
I will give the compliment every day. God damn it! You were in the Deep Six compilation. That's the fucking pinnacle of pinnacles right there. So okay. You just take that for the rest of your life. It doesn't even matter.
Okay, I'll let that. I'll keep that. I'll keep that one. I'll let that one stay.
Well, thank you for getting up so early and having some fun with me.
Oh, my pleasure. It's been a blast. I just hope that people can, you know, that they yeah. I hope that people just don't, you know, that I'm not, don't sound like I'm stuttering and I can't figure out what the hell I want to say because I've burnt too many brain cells in my rock and roll life.
It has nothing to do with that. You never know what question I'm going to fucking come up with next. So I keep everybody on their toes. Listen, Jello and I talked for, it was like fucking 4 hours and he didn't know where the fuck I was going that entire interview. So it's, you never know what you're going to get on this. And everybody just appreciates the rawness. So I appreciate you being raw and just opening up. So thank you.
No, thank you.
Thank you for listening. This concludes our broadcast day.